Hello, you're listening to Gossip Int, the way to gossip intelligently. Gossip Int is a podcast that helps listeners learn critical thinking concepts by applying them to well-known pop culture events and real-world technology-focused examples. Here with us today, we have Karen Frost and Caitlin Hopkins, and I'm Diana Duviel. Details on our backgrounds in threat intelligence and cybersecurity can be found in our podcast bio. Although all participants today work at Microsoft, the views expressed here belong to us alone and do not represent the views of Microsoft. Welcome to our creative and imaginative world of GossipInt.
In our last episode, we looked at the Halo effect, which, for anyone listening, has nothing to do with Beyoncé's song Halo, although it could have to do with Beyoncé herself. Diana, what are we talking about in this episode?
Recency bias. There are two manifestations of recency bias. The first is an unconscious assumption that because something happened recently, it is likely to reoccur again soon. Like a lot of these biases we've been discussing, a clear example can be seen in economics. For example, recency bias makes investors think that a rising stock market will continue to go up or a declining market will continue to fall. This bias can cause investors to make emotionally charged decisions influenced by recent events instead of a thoughtful analysis of stock performance over time. Put another way, they'll see the recent pattern and extrapolate that it will continue, rather than challenging that pattern and think about what would cause it to be broken. The other form of recency bias is when we unconsciously give greater importance to recent events over historical events. So for example, in the context of the workplace, you may have heard the joke about managers who only ask, "But what have you done for me lately?" If you have a performance review every 6 months, for example, your boss may tend to remember only the most recent work you've done, and forget everything you did at the beginning of your rating period. Maybe you did amazing work in the first quarter, but in the second quarter, work was slow. Bad luck for you. Recency bias stems from how our memories work. You can get into some interesting stuff on how our minds store and access memories, short-term versus long-term memory, etc. But when it becomes a cognitive bias, and then it's a problem, is in how it distorts our analytic thinking. Maybe you're a juror who's just sat through 2 weeks of a murder trial. There was a lot of evidence and testimony, but at the end of the day, that doesn't matter as much as what happens at the end. Studies have shown that the most impactful thing you'll hear are the closing arguments, and the defense goes last, making it the final word on the subject. It might be a small advantage on the defense's part, but it's an advantage nevertheless, and you won't even realize how it affects your thinking. Maybe the prosecution had loads of evidence, but if the defense lawyer is a smooth talker, you might find yourself forgetting some of that good evidence.
Okay, so in summary, we remember best the last thing we heard. It seems logical, but that doesn't sound as awful as some of the biases we've discussed in the last few episodes. So what's the remedy for it?
Here's another interesting example of recency bias. You might think people are better drivers today than they were 30 years ago. We have more modern cars with better safety features. We have driver's ed classes that have been refined with time and experience. We have well-paved roads and maintained highways. And surely we're just better at it, right? Aren't we as humans on a progressive path? It turns out that at least as it affects driving, we're not. There were actually fewer accidents per mile driven 3 decades ago than there are today. Our assumption that we're better at things in 2023 than we were in 1993 is therefore a mirage, a reflection of recency bias that can easily be disproven by a quick glance at statistics. Like all biases, overcoming the recency bias starts with recognizing the potential pitfall of the bias. In this case, we might over or underestimate the probability of an event occurring because we've forgotten about other cases of the event. That event could be hazardous, like a nuclear meltdown, or ruinous, like a stock market crash, or like the juror example, we could improperly weigh evidence based on when we heard it, thereby reaching a distorted conclusion. And of course, as the manager example shows, we might unfairly slight an employee who achieved most of their goals early in the year rather than in the later half. From this, we see that there are all sorts of unintentional outcomes that might be the result of this bias. The next step to countering the bias is to examine all available data. We've stressed that a lot in this podcast. Data, data, data. The best way to overcome biases is to widely gather data for analysis. In this case, rather than relying on a gut instinct, which may actually just be a reflection of our most recent data, we should go back and find concrete information to support our decisions and assessments.
We can also look for patterns over a longer period than we might otherwise. If we want to invest in stocks, for example, we should look at more than just the last year's performance. We should go back 5, 10, or even more years. And as with all our biases, we can seek outside advice. The more minds engaged on the subject, the better the chances that the outcome will be less biased. So, Karen, what's our pop culture example today?
Recency bias is a huge thing in Hollywood, and it plays out in a lot of different ways. Did you catch the news the other day when actress Jennifer Lawrence ran afoul of the internet by claiming she was the first woman in the lead of an action movie when she starred in 2012's The Hunger Games?
I did. I absolutely love Jennifer Lawrence.
Lawrence immediately tried to backtrack and explain away her comments, but I think the truth is her words were an unintentional, honest reflection of the effects of recency bias. Lawrence is relatively young, and on the spot, she probably couldn't think of many other actresses who'd been in similar roles up to 2012. But the truth is, there is a very long history of women in action roles. Off the top of my head, I can think of Linda Hamilton in the Terminator movies, Mila Jovovich in the Resident Evil movies, Kate Beckinsale in the Underworld movies, Angelina Jolie in the Tomb Raider movies, and Uma Thurman in the Kill Bill movies. All of these predated Lawrence, some by decades. And the list goes on and on. Charlize Theron, Keira Knightley, Lucy Liu, Halle Berry, and others had already played action roles by the early to mid-2000s. That doesn't even count actresses on TV shows, among whom we might include Linda Carter, who was the original Wonder Woman, the stars of Charlie's Angels, which ran from 1976 to 1981, and Xena warrior princess herself, Lucy Lawless. The latter were famous for their roles a good decade before Lawrence was even born. Lawrence's revised point that Hollywood has historically preferred putting men in action roles over women is statistically correct. For every Angelina Jolie, there's a Gerard Butler, Jason Statham, and Vin Diesel. But there are several female action movies each year, and these roles can definitely be commercially successful. To put on my data analysis hat, I would be willing to bet that female action movies are just as likely to be financially successful or unsuccessful as male action movies. The difference is that there are fewer of them, so it's easier to pick out the failures. I want to point out here that while Lawrence looks at Hollywood and sees a disappointing trend, I actually see a positive one. Sure, there's Iron Man, Captain America, Ant-Man, Loki, and the Hulk, but on the other hand, there's Captain Marvel, Black Widow, and Wonder Woman. Male heroes may still outnumber female heroines, but this is a genre that has more male viewers in general. I actually think we're doing pretty well on the whole.
So that really comes back to our earlier point about looking at the data instead of making a snap judgment, especially if that judgment's just based on our personal experience.
Absolutely. Another way in which recency bias comes into play in Hollywood has to do with the careers of celebrities. We talked a few episodes ago about anchor bias and how once an anchor is set, it can be hard to reset. As our example, we used Miley Cyrus. But the recency bias is one way that anchor effect can be mitigated. Here's an example. Nowadays, Dwayne Johnson is the world's highest paid actor. He's immediately recognizable to theatergoers as a hulking, muscular action star who combines charisma and a deft comedic touch. But what Gen Z viewers might not know is that he began his professional entertainment career as a wrestler, joining the WWF as Rocky Maivia in 1996. He quickly became successful as The Rock, which is how most millennials and Gen Xers knew him, until he turned to film and reverted to his true name, Dwayne Johnson. Recency bias doesn't erase the past, nor does it affect everyone equally. Johnson continued to appear in wrestling sporadically until 2019. Anyone interested in wrestling would be fully aware of his ties to that part of the entertainment world. But anyone born in 2001, the year of his first film, or later, would likely know Johnson exclusively as an actor, with no knowledge of his career before that. Recency bias in action. A similar example is the actor Robert Downey Jr. Over the last two decades, Downey has had a stellar career, most notably playing the iconic Tony Stark, aka Iron Man. From 2013 to 2015, Downey was even Hollywood's highest paid actor. But as is the case with Dwayne Johnson, Downey's history goes much deeper than just the last 20 years. In 1985, he was a cast member for a year on Saturday Night Live before being dumped as the worst cast member of all time. Over the next decade, Downey built his dramatic acting career, eventually earning an Oscar nomination in 1992 for his role as Charlie Chaplin in the movie Chaplin. He was considered a brilliant and up-and-coming actor, but then his career hit the skids. From 1996 to 2001, he was arrested multiple times for drug possession, including heroin, cocaine, and marijuana. He was in and out of rehab and jail before finally committing to recovery in 2001. His acting career resumed a few years later, and in 2007, he was cast as Iron Man. The rest is history. Downey is now synonymous with Iron Man, and as a result, few people remember him as the guy who was fired from Ally McBeal for drug use.
That's kind of an inspiring story of redemption there, actually. But it also highlights how the advertising or the marketing industry can really use these sorts of biases to change the way that the public views reality.
As we close out the idea of recency bias in pop culture, I want to highlight the extent to which this bias colors our individual perception of the entertainment industry. If I were to ask you, Diana, to name what you think are the top 20 movies or songs of all time, there's a high likelihood that the majority of the things you would name were produced in the last three decades. You don't mean to short things like Casablanca, released in 1942, but it's easier to remember a movie that came out 10 years ago than one that was released decades before you were born. This temporal bias even comes into play within a single year. A plotting of the release dates of movies that came out between 1999 and 2018 reveals that 60% of Oscar-nominated movies are released in the last third of the year. This so-called Oscar season is likely so that the movie is fresh in the mind of the voting Academy. We might not be Academy members, but we can easily test ourselves to show just how much we're affected by it too. If I ask what you watched on Netflix this year, I'm willing to bet you're more likely to name the things you watched last week than what you watched 9 months ago. In my case, that's Wednesday, which was a fantastic show, but I can't remember any of the fantastic things I watched even a few months ago. And don't bother asking what my favorite show was even 1 year ago. That's already lost in the mists of time. Again, as we talk about biases, they're not always something nefarious with disastrous consequences. It's not life and death if I can't remember the name of the baking show I watched a year ago. But we can see how there might be more ominous effects for this bias too. And that's why we want to be careful with it.
That absolutely makes sense. So, Caitlin, what's our tech topic today?
Well, you might be hard-pressed to think of an example of recency bias in technology. To be honest, at first, I certainly was. But when you think about it, there's actually a huge consequential example of how recency bias affects tech, and that's in big data.
Ooh, I love big data.
When people talk about big data, they're generally talking about data that is so large, fast, or complex that it's either difficult or impossible to process using normal or traditional methods. Because of digitization in the 21st century, data now comes from innumerable sources. Smart devices, social media, financial transactions, industrial equipment, and more. Over 90% of the world's data was created in the last 3 years alone. And in 2023, we will create 120 zettabytes of new data. To put a little bit of perspective around that, a zettabyte is 1 sextillion bytes.
I've never heard of a zettabyte. That sounds like a made-up word out of science fiction. You know how old I am? I am so old that I remember when a terabyte was an inconceivable amount of information. Now that's nothing, but I digress. Tell us more about this recency bias problem with big data.
So the problem doesn't stem from the amount of data that exists, but rather the rate at which this amount has increased and it will continue to increase. A BBC article published in 2016 uses a pretty good analogy to describe this phenomenon. So imagine you have a photo album that has pictures from the first 18 years of your life. Let's say that photo album has 2 pictures in it for your first 2 years. If you apply the same rate of data increase as the rate of increase for global data, you would have 2,000 pictures of you from the ages 6 to 8, 200,000 pictures from the ages 10 to 12, and an astounding 200 million for the ages 16 to 18. That basically equates to more than 3 pictures for every single second of those last 2 years. You can imagine just how many pictures you'd have thereafter. And here lies the problem. When gathering or analyzing information, as soon as you start looking backward at historical data, you have way too much recent data and too little old data. We see this very clearly in the photo album analogy. You lived just as many days from when you were born to the age of 2 as you did from ages 16 to 18. But if you looked at the photo album, it would be 2 photos against 200 million. They'd be completely lost in the shuffle. And this is where recency bias comes into play, at least from a big data perspective. Because there is just so much more recent data than old, our analyses disproportionately weigh recent information. This makes it really hard to use big data to analyze the impact of recent phenomena. For example, how has having hormones in our food impacted our health? Some evidence suggests that it may be linked to an increase of children reaching early puberty. But historical data on puberty ages was limited in race and socioeconomic factors, so this historical data isn't actually robust enough for there to be a strong analytic case on the causality of hormones in our food. Understanding recency bias in big data and how computers apply recency may actually also help us to design better artificial intelligence and machine learning. By allowing this bias toward newer information, it makes AI more human-like. So tailoring the AI to focus on a smaller, more recent set of data could lead it to produce more human predictions. Or doing the opposite and trying to mitigate the effect of data recency could help our AI to make more objective predictions.
Feels like AI is the topic of so many of our episodes.
You're right, it's everywhere. But another place in tech that reflects recency bias is in search engine algorithms. Let's use Google as an example. Google's search algorithm more heavily favors content posted most recently over older content, even if the older content contains more comprehensive or pertinent information. Put another way, recency over relevancy is the default search filter, and few people change that result order. Of course, there is some logic to this default. Most people want new news, not old news. But it also means the algorithm's recency bias can skew a searcher's perception or maybe even completely misinform them. What if the web page you want was uploaded in 2009, but it's on page 7 of the Google search results? If we're honest, few people go past page 1 or 2 to actually find results. Page 7 might as well not even exist. But let's use Elon Musk as an example of recency bias in Google search results. No, I promise you, we're not obsessed with him. It's just that the New York Times published a rather good article that mentions recency in search results using him as an example. So our work is kind of cut out for us. So step one of our experiment is to run a Google search of just his name. When I do, I get a few generic results. His Wikipedia page, his profile on Forbes, his bio on Tesla's website, etc. But taking up comparatively large portions of the search results is much more recent content. A section titled Top Stories lists articles published as recently as 1 hour ago. These articles mention the latest Musk scandals and news, with titles like Elon Musk becomes first person to ever lose $200 billion, and Twitter not paying rent since Elon Musk took over, new lawsuit alleges. Google also uses a relatively large section of the first search result page to highlight Musk's three most recent tweets underneath the link to his Twitter account. Okay. So Google prioritizes the latest press about Musk for its first page search results. But what are Google searchers really looking for? Is it the most immediate news? When searching for content on an individual as complex as Musk, is it really helpful for Google to return such a large number of similar stories about the latest newsworthy thing? Or, for that matter, his latest tweets? Often, the most recent post isn't the most important thing. And sometimes it's completely unrelated to what we're actually searching for in the first place. As an example, you have to go back a fair number of search result pages to find just one article about Musk's acquisition of Twitter, a huge event that spurred hundreds, if not thousands, of online articles. You have to go back even more to find mentions of past Musk scandals. For example, when he was accused by a flight attendant of exposing himself to her, his alleged affair with a Google co-founder's wife, and fraud charges filed against him and Tesla by the Securities and Exchange Commission. If we're playing devil's advocate, one could say that maybe Musk is actively trying to suppress this stuff. Maybe he paid a brand management company to bury this bad press. And that might just be the slightest bit true. But what is more likely is that Google's search engine algorithm weighs recency so heavily and Musk is in the news so often that older information gets pushed down and becomes harder and harder to find. Under other circumstances, I'd say this was to Musk's advantage, but given Twitter's current and dire straits, I'm not so sure.
The Twitter debacle is wild. I can't look away. It's like a train wreck.
Where this problem of recency bias in algorithms becomes even worse is when there are people or groups with motivations trying to shape the public's perception. Although I just used Google as an example, the problem is not unique to that search engine. We saw a lot of this during presidential elections. Individual campaigns or even nation-state-sponsored hacking groups release information and misinformation, traditionally or through bots, to paint their preferred candidate in a more positive light and the competition in a more negative one. Social media algorithms, like those owned by Facebook and Twitter, are susceptible to this. Karen, I bet you can think of some instances where a celebrity or their supporters may have wanted to change the public's perception of them, and they may have been aided by this recency bias in either search result algorithms or social media algorithms.
Actually, my first thought was October surprises. For anyone who doesn't recognize that term, what it refers to is the planned, or not, release of information about a political candidate right before elections, or sometimes even just a major event like a natural disaster. Since our national elections are in early November, any derogatory information that comes to light about a candidate in October will be fresh in voters' minds as they go to the polls. This planned sabotage, particularly at the presidential level, has been happening since 1840 and was once called Rohrbacking, or Rohrbacking. To cite a recent example of the practice, however, see what I'm doing here? On October 7th, 2016, a recording from 2005 was released in which future President Trump discussed leveraging power to grope women. The timing wasn't coincidental. That recording could have come out any time, but the holder waited until that moment in an effort to derail Trump's presidential campaign. But it wasn't just him who got an October surprise. The same day, WikiLeaks began a two-month campaign of leaking emails from the account of John Podesta, Hillary Clinton's campaign chief, as part of a campaign meant to damage Clinton's presidential run. The American media has now been more or less conditioned to expect some sort of October surprise every national campaign season. There's always someone trying to undermine an opponent. In October 2022, for example, the Daily Beast reported that Herschel Walker, who was running for a Georgia Senate seat, had paid for his wife's 2009 abortion despite claiming to be pro-life. October surprises have always been powerful, even before the age of mass media, but today they have more reach than ever. When an October surprise hits the news, it's picked up everywhere, and the information disseminated at the speed of light, taking advantage of pre-existing informational networks to influence voters. This means we should all expect some sort of October surprise in October 2024. When it hits, remember this podcast episode, and it'll make a lot more sense. By the way, when we talk about recency bias in tech, one of the other things that comes to my mind is social media itself. As a geriatric millennial, it amuses me when Gen Z assumes they're the first to have ever used a particular format in social media. For example, before Facebook, there was MySpace. Before Spotify, there was Pandora. Before Facebook Messenger, there was AOL Instant Messenger. Before Facebook Marketplace, there was Craigslist. Recency bias leads us to think that any new product is revolutionary. But in some ways, we're just recycling the same ideas, just in new packaging.
So true. Next episode, our topic is the third person effect. No spoilers here. You'll have to listen to find out what it's about. Thanks for listening, and catch us next time for another episode of Gossipint.
Hey guys, Karen here. As we finish today's episode on the recency bias, I just want to remind you, what are the other biases that we've already covered on this podcast? You know, just to act as a little refresher. So we started with the confirmation bias, then moved into the Dunning-Kruger effect, groupthink, anchor bias, and then the halo effect. One of the things that we learn about recency bias, coupled with other biases, is that we remember the first thing we learned and the last thing we learned. So if any of those biases that I just listed don't sound familiar or you can't remember what they're about, go ahead and Google it. Read the Wikipedia page. You don't have to go back and listen to the episode, but refresh your memory on what these things are, because out of sight is out of mind, and we want to keep these things fresh so we can remember them and work on our critical thinking skills. So join us next time as we discuss the third person effect, and we'll be talking about QAnon and conspiracy theories.